By the powers vested in me, by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
I won't do it. I won't be serious. Welcome to Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill along with Matt Butler. And we're going to tone it down. Yeah, I'm tired of serious. So many things going on in the world. So many issues. People are just all up in.
What constellation do you prefer?
Hi, everybody. It's a good night. It's a good day today. Every day on the right side of the grass is a good day. Don't you think so, Matt?
Well, I was going to ask you what your personal opinion is on the preferred way to write a manifesto. Should we do it on the computer? Should I do it on a typewriter? Should I do it by cutting letters out of magazines?
You know, you got to speak to your creative inner child when you do that, man. You got to decide what makes you, what's going to send your message with the most effective.
Between that and shopping for a cabin in Idaho, I'm pretty busy tonight.
Nah, hang on there, everybody. Can we start there? Let's start there tonight. Can we? Are you okay to go right into that?
Go for it.
Sure. So my good friend Matt Butler, producer of this show, has had some issues today. Came into work today, Matt and I, a couple hours ago. How do you feel? What do you want to talk about tonight? What's going on in the world tonight? How should we use this time we have with you, the audience? And Matt was just distraught. You could tell you were distraught. And you're having interactions with how would you frame the company you're talking about? It's not a bank, right?
Right. It is what is called a robo-investor. See, what happened is with the rise of technology and the app culture, a lot of people are like, how can we get younger and more tech-savvy people to invest their money, set aside some of their spare change or whatever they've got, so they're not just wasting their money, they're actually putting it into investment.
And this is a robo-investor, you called it, right?
Right. So it's an algorithm of sorts.
Before you move on, is it like Acorn, that kind of thing?
Some along those lines,
it picks up your spare change, rounds up your purchases,
right,
or whatever,
you can
extra
put
pennies.
Money into it and have it invest, in an algorithm.
And it's all online.
Exactly.
An app all on your phone. Phone.
Yes. So I had this situation where late last year to early this year, the bank that I used was just this major multinational bank, and they said, hey, we don't want to do consumer accounts anymore. We want to do business. We're getting out of the consumer banking portion of the market.
Okay,
fine. That's fine. So they closed my account, and that's in, it's in good standing. That's all fine and well. But I had that account linked to this app, and I didn't give it much thought until I finally went full-time here at Cairo. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to put aside a little of my money instead of buying expensive Pretender shirts on eBay for the rest of my life.
Which I think, by the way, are a great investment. Let's not besmirch investing in vintage cultural memorabilia.
True.
But not just a Pretender shirt.
But there does need to be balance in one's
Yes, a balanced
life.
Portfolio. You got to have Beanie Babies, vintage T-shirts.
Legos, don't forget.
And a little bit of crypto, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Exactly.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Indeed. So I'm all pumped up. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be a responsible adult finally at 40 years old, start to invest some money. So I try to log into this app and it tells me your account has been locked.
Mm.
So I'm like, okay, this happens from time to time. It's been a while. Well, it turns out my account is locked because it was tied to the old bank account.
Okay.
That bank has been closed.
That bank again decided to get out of the personal banking and stick to strictly commercial.
Exactly.
To quote the great Frank Zappa, strictly commercial.
I love it.
Thank you.
So, yeah. So that was that situation. But the thing was, it was about it. I call them up. I go, okay. And actually, thankfully, you can reach someone on the phone still at this point.
Well, yeah, that's,
business,
boy, that's
a miracle in and of
rare.
Itself.
Yeah, that's a.
So I call them up. I go, okay. I want to use my new current bank, all positive, all good, got money in there. Let's do this thing. Let's use the new bank and update the bank number on the account. Sir, we can't do that. Well, why can't you do that? Well, you need to provide us with a statement from your old bank.
Okay.
Well, as we've established, because everyone is doing things on phones now, everyone's going paperless. You know, it's better for the environment.
Okay.
We don't check our mail anyway if we're under 50. So they say to go back, say, well, you can go back and get a statement.
Right.
But I can't log in, and this is Kafka-esque, as Jesse Pinkman and his friends might say. I can't log into my old bank because there is no longer access to the online portion of accounts that they no longer service.
So you'll have to reach out by phone, probably?
So I have to find someone at this bank that no longer supports U.S. consumer accounts, get them to dig back into their records to prove that I had the account that I no longer wish to use.
Right. And you just basically got yourself caught in a little, catch 22, a little circle.
Precisely.
Circle work. I'll clean that up for the folks at home who have their kids listening to the show tonight. Yeah, it was a little bit of a circle work on your part.
Precisely.
Wow.
And the thing I find amazing about it is they claim in an email that they're doing this for my security. Mm. But the irony is that they're not allowing me to access my securities.
That's frustrating. So if I've got all the players correctly identified, you've got an international bank you used to bank with in a private banking, personal banking situation. They decided to get out of that game because there wasn't enough profit in it for them. Right?
Precisely.
Okay. And you can no longer access that account online, right? That you tried doing
which
that.
Which was the only way I accessed it, because I did not do paper statements.
Okay, I get it.
There's probably a lesson in that, but with my luck, I would have moved and lost the paper statements anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
I have found over the years that going paperless has made my life easier, because I'm terrible at record keeping. You know, it's the weirdest thing, Matt. I can find something from 20 years ago that has no importance. I mean, it's got, sentimental value, but from a logistical standpoint, it's got no significance whatsoever. I know exactly where that is, but the statement that came in last week in the mail, I have no idea. I have no idea. I know where I was when I opened it. I know where I put it when I laid it down, and it got moved somewhere. So when everything moves online, I can search anything. I can seem to always find what I need when I go online.
Assuming you can remember your password.
Oh, that's the other thing. Yeah, passwords. Yeah. Do you keep your passwords written down somewhere?
I do not.
Do you keep them in your phone at all?
I store them encrypted in the cloud.
Exactly. Okay, that's what I do. I keep them in my phone, and my phone is backed up to the cloud. So one of the notes sections in my phone is all the various passwords I have. And, I hate when passwords expire and folks make you change your password on a regular basis. We do that here at work. And I understand the security reasons for that.
But my favorite with that is always, you cannot use any of your previous passwords. Those are the ones I remember.
Exactly. Exactly. When you change a password, you change just one. I'm not going to ask you to give too much information.
Do you want the last four of my social, too, while we're at it?
Yeah, the name of your first pet, the street you were born on, your mom's middle name. Yeah, and the last four of your social. If just those things, Matt, I think we should be fine giving those to the audience.
Yeah, why not?
Do you change like one element of your password, keeping the basic same password, but just make a varying change at the end?
That's what I do.
I do that too, because usually when I don't know what a password I've used is, I can get it in four or five tries. It's this with an exclamation at the end. It's this with two exclamations at the end. It's this with 1 year. It's this with a different year at the end. My password is one short 3-word phrase always, and it's filthy. I mean, filthy. It is a filthy 3-word phrase. And because it's memorable, I always know what it is. It was embarrassing when I had to explain to my daughters what the family password was when sharing with them accounts, because it's the same password for banking and for Netflix and for Hulu and for whatever other Disney Plus. My Disney Plus password would make Walt spin in his grave, attach his frozen head, and yell at me. That's how bad my password is. But I know what it is, and I know where to find it when I've lost it. I guess that what I'm trying to get to as long-windedly as possible, obviously, is that you haven't hit a dead end. It's just massive inconvenience, right? You'll be able to reach out to the international banking community you were dealing with and speak to a human, explain your situation. They'll be able to verify your identity through various security checks that they've given you over the years, right? They'll be able to ask you security questions. And, barring that you get an absolute maroon on the other end of the phone, you'll be able to track down your information. And they'll be able to email that to you probably, right? Hopefully.
Perhaps. But the problem is that one of the things that was most frustrating about this situation for me is that I had verified my identity and I could provide them with a current bank.
Right.
So I'm saying these two things already fit what you need to do current business.
No. Oh, yeah.
You should not be locking up my funds. And, that's the twist that I really loved. And actually, I find this kind of funny, even though it's annoying as heck. So I go, okay. Well, I've enjoyed doing business with you, but if we can't come to terms on this, how about you just give me the money back that I have in your service? Well, they're very polite about it, of course. They say, sir, we can't do that. I go, why not? Because you need to prove that you own the account that was previously closed and prove that that account was, in fact, closed before we can unlock your account.
So weird.
I'm like, dude.
Yeah, I know. They talk in circles. And there's no you've brought logic into the conversation, and there's no place for logic in the conversation with these entities that we're dealing with. They've got systems in place and protocols that they follow that are designed basically to keep their dimmest employees able to keep up. Right? I mean, you're using just, wait a minute, doesn't it make sense to you if I can prove to you who I am?
I said that.
Provide to you with the new information you'll need. Isn't that enough for us to move forward, Professor Cool? But no.
And you say that to it, and this is what frustrates. Like, I know there are good customer service people. I'm not trying to bag on all customer service.
No, I hear you.
But the locked loop where you try to explain something, you break it down into very basic steps, and you go, okay, can you see why I'm willing to meet the criteria that are required here,
and you're
just choosing not to listen? And then they repeat the same script.
Well, sir,
your account is locked. Well, I'm aware of that.
Yeah, I know.
It's the problem I'm trying to solve. Thank you.
It can be brutal.
It's sort of like that Seinfeld sketch.
Yes.
Sir, I know the point of the reservation. I don't think you do.
I don't think you do. if you understood, you'd have a car for me. One of the greatest. And that was one of the beauties of Seinfeld, is where they really took the everyday experiences we have and saw the insane comedy in those moments, insanity in those moments, and we're able to portray those that we could all be understanding and relate to.
Far from a show about nothing, it was practically a show about reality.
About everything. Yeah, about everything we do on a daily basis. Very well. Very well put. So, and we're not talking about a lot of money, right? $250,000, something like that. So, I mean, not a lot of money.
My vast, massive fortune is tied up in this app.
Not a lot of money, you know. you don't use the app anymore? Or you still do?
Well, here
is why. You want to use the app, right?
There was a period of my life where I just wasn't, you know, I was just struggling to stay afloat financially. So I didn't have a lot of spare change or a regular paycheck to invest. So I just let it sit there and simmer for a while.
Right.
Assuming that I could access it when I came
back.
When
you needed it, sure. Yeah. And now you can't when you do. And again, you're not wanting to pull it out to, you know, to buy a home or something like that. You're wanting to just start to add to it, to further add to it.
Well, that's what I told
you
guys. Yeah. I said, I am trying
to give you, your money.
Give you more business.
Isn't that what frustrates you? I'm trying to give you more money, and you're making it hard for me to do that.
I have never seen someone work so hard to not accept
money. Take business. Isn't that the craziest thing?
It's a crazy world.
But the customer service that you received, was it okay, or did it just made it worse because they couldn't go off script to solve your problem?
Here's why it was worse. It was on paper. It was polite, which made me feel less polite.
Yeah. But, I feel you.
I was getting a little bit into the Samuel L. Jackson mode there towards the end.
Sure.
But
say what again?
Say what again? But no, it was competent, but it was also useless because I did not feel heard, and there was no escalation. There was no change in what was being said to adjust to the reality of my situation. It was just the same repetitious thing.
Yeah, you get in a loop, and there's no way out.
And that also
no way
served
out.
To make me more upset.
Yeah, because it's funny, when you can see the simple, clear side of something, a simple, clear solution, a way through the forest, and you're trying very patiently and cordially to convey that to the other side of the phone, and they've got a script, and that's all they know. And they're not even allowed to bring logic into the problem, to bring problem solving and say, well, if A equals B, then C is obviously what we do next. They're not even allowed to think of it that way, and it's frustrating. A texter texted in at 888-973-5476. We've all had experiences like this where we get caught in a customer service loop or a protocol, a policy situation dealing with whether it's a bank or whatever it might be. In Matt's case, an online investment or an online – what did you call it? You had a term for it.
A robo-investor.
Robo-investor.
I have a theory, though, maybe as to why, because I do seek the why, even though this is frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe because it is a tech-based company that they have some sort of different view of security and integration than normal people have. Right. So from a tech – like there is probably some techie in Silicon Valley or here in Seattle that could explain to me why it's this way. Yeah. Like there's probably a convoluted reason for it, but it makes no sense to me, the end user.
A texter is asking us, why couldn't you just give this person you were speaking with your social and name and prove who you were?
Which I did.
Right. The problem isn't that you – it's not that you couldn't prove who you were.
It's that I couldn't prove that the previous account had been closed.
Right. So that was the thing. The robo-investor wasn't the issue.
Which is strange because think about it this way. If that account was still open, I could log in and change to a different bank account.
Right. But since they closed off – right. They closed off their personal banking. And when they closed off their personal banking, the robo-investor app said your account's been locked because that account is no longer active.
Correct. As yeah. did the customer service representative numerous times to yeah. his answer to most of my inquiries. Well, sir, your account has been locked. And I'm like, well, thank you for reminding me.
Thank you, Stan, for the text. That's a great question. It's because the people you're dealing with, they really aren't the problem. The problem is the bank decided they weren't going to work with personal loans anymore. And that's your solution is you have to reach out to that group of people.
So I have to basically call up – well, I won't name them, but I have to call them up and kind of go through the same agony with them until they can dig back into their vaults and prove that I had an account with them.
Right, so, and they'll be able to send you what you need to get to the other. And so it's not an insurmountable problem. You haven't lost that money. It's not gone forever. Because there are people out there who have had moments with various lenders or savings groups who go bankrupt or belly up or close their doors, and that money's gone forever. Investment companies, and that money's just gone forever.
I had a friend who lost, claimed to lose access to a Bitcoin holder, Bitcoin wallet. It wasn't a ton of money compared to what some people make off Bitcoin, but it was enough where it really would have helped this guy. And for the life of him, he could not figure out how to get back into it, and they could not help him unlock it.
I had someone give me $5 in Bitcoin when it first started, and I've got it somewhere. And this would have been in like 2013, somewhere in that area. I'm not sure what $5 in Bitcoin in 2013 would be worth today. I have no idea if it's worth anything, but I think $5 is it like a share? I don't understand crypto at all.
It's a fraction of it.
Okay, so it would be worth much, much more than $5 today?
I don't know exactly. It would be worth more than $5.
Right,
I don't
but
know
it's not
going to
be. It's not going to be a college education.
Right, like you didn't even have a full coin.
No,
but it's still worth.
Well,
something.
What was a Bitcoin worth in 2013? That's what I want to know, right? So and you because you're the fastest, smartest guy I know.
Well, that's troubling.
I know it really is, and
I'm
was going to come to you,
guy you know. Jeez,
I was going to come to you for investment and robo robo app.
Yeah, please do.
What was a Bitcoin going for in 2013?
It went from $13 to $1,100.
So I it could be anywhere on that slide, right?
I think that's saying that it was down as low as 13 and went up to 1,100.
And I think somebody gave me I think it was they gave me $5. They gave me 5 Bitcoin.
If they gave five actual coins, then
yeah, in a digital sense with a tracking number and all that stuff, right? Yeah. So if somebody gave me 5 bitcoins in 2013, what's a bitcoin worth now?
Now's where
I start to really hate myself. I'm going home and rip my garage to shreds.
You're going to be shopping for that Idaho cabin right along with me, my friend. $20,332.
Maybe 100K, up to 100K if I have 5 of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's chump change.
Yeah, compared to what they pay us.
Oh my.
Here is my fight music from the Prodigy's Firestarter.
Someone says, oh my God, Spike, please tell me you don't have the same password for all your different accounts and that you very rarely change them. You must have different passwords for different things and change them once in a while. I really don't.
You just change your character, right?
Yeah, I really don't. I mean, they're all variations on the same disgusting phrase. So maybe, oh my gosh, this texture says I bought 100 full Bitcoin 20-ish years ago. Wow, hold on. I'm gonna read this when we come back. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill with Matt Butler. We'll talk a bit more about this, about the evolution and technology of finance and how much who sold like 5 shares of Microsoft to buy a couch and now it's that guy. I love that guy. It's Cairo Nights. We'll be right back, folks. Text of the show says, manifestos, that's so 60s.
Time to bring them back.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Poor Matt. Got himself caught in a little loop.
And it raises the question, too, whatever happened to the art of customer service?
That's a fantastic question. You know, my dad was a manager of car dealerships when I was growing up. I have told you guys before, when I was a real young kid, before I got my teenage years going and got in an independence, he would manage Radio Shack stores. And he was the kind of guy that would come in and clean up the troubling stores and that. And Radio Shack used to be a major national brand.
I was going to say, perhaps you should explain for the younger portion of our audience
what Radio Shack is, right?
Also what radio is, too.
Shut up. The Tandy Corporation was one of the first people that made, like, personal computers. And Radio Shack was a store you could go into to buy stereo equipment and hi-fi equipment, TV antennas for the believe it or not, TV used to come through the air for you youngsters. God, I can't believe I am not my grandfather yet. But TV used to be broadcast from towers, much like radio is, without like cable coming into your wall. And you would have an antenna on your roof. The Radio Shack sold TV antennas and rotors, because you would literally have a rotor on your TV antenna above your house and a control in your living room so that you could literally, with a motorized rotor, turn the TV antenna on top of your house to aim it to get the best reception for whatever signal you were trying to watch a ball game or whatever on.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the moon landing. Maybe it was, you know, a Princess Di's wedding. That was probably long after TV and air signals were gone. I mean, that was Radio Shack. Then my dad ran car dealerships. My dad got in the automobile industry. We were talking about customer service. And my dad did this early for me when I started working for my dad after I gave up on 6-7 years of college and really didn't think I was going to ever get out alive. To me, much like Trump had said, you know, college was my Vietnam. I can't believe he ever said that, by the way. What a moron. So we're talking about customer service. My dad instilled to us that everybody, if you look around, there's 20 Ford dealers in town. There's, 15 Chevy dealers. There's a dozen Honda dealers. There's 15 Toyota dealers in town.
I'm old enough to remember even in not too far back where you could drive through towns like, my sister used to live in Northwest Arkansas, and every little population center would have like two car dealerships. There'd be a new one down the road. Like at one point, that was a much bigger thing. Now there are some places where I've visited where there's not even a new car dealership in the entire county.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I can't even imagine. That's interesting for you to say, because I can't even imagine that. But you're right. I mean, I've just driven across the country, and you can go hours and hours and hours without seeing a car dealership. You're right. I hadn't even thought about that. The point I was trying to make was my dad conveyed to us the only difference we have from all these other dealerships in town. There's 12 different places a guy can get a brand new Honda in this city. The only difference you have to offer is you as their customer service representative, as your I was a car salesman. But that's customer service. You're trying to build a relationship with folks. You're trying to take care of people's needs when they come to you. It's even more so after the purchase. You know, we've all had nightmare dealings with customer service these days, because there was a period not too long ago where businesses took us for granted, the customers. Businesses, and we're very much the same in this business right now. The listeners of this radio station are our customers. And how we deal with them, how we interact with them, that's our customer service. So I was kind of told at a very young age that you are a ambassador of this car dealership. It might as well say Spikes on the sign out front, because when people think about this business, they think about their experience with you. And we spend a lot of money on advertising to get people to come into our dealership. We spent a lot of money on the facility, on the maintenance of the facility, making sure it's nice, clean, professional, that all the parts work, that all the services that we offer our customers are as good as they can be, top shelf experience kind of stuff. But you, the guy talking to them, everything that can all go to crap if you do a terrible job. And that mentality of valuing a customer seems to have been lost. But I think that it's making a comeback. I really do. I think customer service is becoming important again because when times are tough, you know, people, you say you vote with your dollars. You know, we decide as customers when we boycott a certain company for the way they treat this person or when they make public statements about this, that, or the other thing, we decide where we spend our money.
And I, like I said to you before this show, this and other a couple of other recent experiences have shown to me that if someone is professional, if someone is quick to respond, responsive, helpful, answers my questions, pays attention to what I have to say, I am going to be so much more loyal when I find those businesses and those firms because of all of I'm experiencing lately with poor customer service. So they could really stand out. The good ones can really stand out. The problem is, though, another problem with this is that in the age of tech, especially with these chatbots and all, they're finding so many ways, even on the phone. Used to be you could get on the phone, and when you'd get peeved off enough about going through all the different levels of the menu, you'd just keep pressing pound or keep pressing zero, and you'd reach somebody. They figured that one out. So they are making it very hard in a lot of instances to even reach a real human being. Now, I will give the people that I was dealing with today credit on that one front. When I called them, they picked up the phone, and I did not have a long wait on hold. I just had a long wait in a repetitive process once I reached somebody. So it's a slight improvement.
And you have really, I think, gotten down to the nut of the problem, is that when we do get good customer service, it's such a rarity, we're blown away. We're speechless.
You can hardly believe it.
Our jaws drop. And I think that is what I do think that's making a comeback. That companies are again realizing how valuable a customer is, how much it costs to attract a new customer if you lose one. It's so much more economical for a company to keep a customer than acquire a new one. When you already have a customer in your business's supply chain, your buying chain, you know, your retail chain, your commerce, for them to get fed up with you or unhappy, dissatisfied with you and move on to another company, to get a new customer, you've got to go out and advertise to that person on numerous platforms. You've got to invest a lot of money to get just one new person in the door, then win them over by, again, going through the same customer service dance, the same retail sale dance that you've done to get the last guy. Has to start the whole process over again. So it's much more economically feasible and good business
and as much as
to keep
I
our customers.
As much as I decry the swipe left, swipe right culture, that in the business world, people are more aware of their options because of the internet. So now they are very aware of what things cost and where they can go if you don't provide them with good service.
And that's – I mentioned this the other night. I used to sell cars for a living, but that was 30 years ago. It's an entirely different world now. I mean, customers are completely informed. The internet has given all of us – exactly what a car dealership pays for a car. I'm using the car dealership example because it's the best one I know.
Think of how much the internet has done for people's medical education.
Well, that's a whole dangerous different alleyway, you know, back door. Yeah, one thing our doctor told us, you know, the last thing you want to do is look something up.
Don't I know it? Yeah. Now I'm concerned about how many things I might have.
I know, right? You could. Boy, it's this is an interesting topic to get into. It's so easy to find misinformation. It's so hard to find accurate information, and I fall victim to it too. We all do. You know, there should be easier, trusted news sources that you don't have to wonder what you're hearing. How do we get off on this topic? We're talking about customer service, and I get a little bit sidetracked from misinformation and looking stuff up on the internet. I guess we'll just we're almost up against a break here in a couple minutes. So I'll just say that, you know, if you find a company that has good customer service, you know, if, for me, I'm sticking with them. I would actually pay more to stick with a company with good customer service than go across the street to save a few bucks and come up to a company that just doesn't care about me as a customer. You know, I remember selling cars, and I had experiences where I would bend over backwards with people, work with them for multiple visits over multiple days, trying to get them into the right car, making sure it got fed all their needs, that they got the deal they wanted to, and then they would go and buy it from a guy across the street to save $100. You know, and you call the guy back, hey, I thought we had an appointment on Saturday. Well, we decided to buy it across, blah, blah, they gave me a better deal. I said, so the 3 days I spent with you, my time, my experience, my educating you on this vehicle wasn't even worth $100 to you. It's a horrible thing to feel. Hi, everybody. I'm Spike O'Neill. Welcome to Cairo Nights. We'll be back right after these. Lots of stuff to get to, I promise you. We're not just going to ramble all night, I promise you. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Lots of great texters, by the way, on the subject of customer service. You know, people saying, you know, you're right, there is no more customer service, and anybody who does give good customer service will have my business for life. To them, I mentioned that we had a rotor on our TV antenna, and it was only because my dad worked at Radio Shack. I think we got it for, you know, cost. This guy says, we lived in the country. We had a ladder. We had a ladder on the side of our house. You would have to climb up to the roof and turn the antenna. And how about now? How about now?
I can just imagine this becoming a ritual or whatever show, you know, before your family evening of television. Hey, it's 10 minutes to 7. We got to send somebody up on the roof now and point it north.
And hope the lightning slows down before you get up there. No kidding. That's how it was, man. Speaking of customer service, here's a story we talked about the other night when it happened. The Rams played the Niners on Monday Night Football in Santa Clara. During the game, right before the second half, or right before the end of the first half, I should say, a couple of protesters made their way onto the field. Now, we only saw one, and they never show these on TV. We only saw one because there was a young man and a young woman working for a group called the Direction, we now know, for the Direct Action Everywhere organization. They were protesting apparently a factory farm and some hogs that had been stolen from a factory farm. And, you know, they're trying to raise awareness for their cause. And I get protests, but running onto a field at a pro sporting event, it's usually just hijinks for no real valid purpose. These folks at least seem to have a genuine, humane concern. You know, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of pork, not pigs so much as pork. And you got to open the pigs up to get the pork. So if it's a fight between bacon and pigs, the pigs lose and bacon wins. Anyway, we mentioned that the protester who was eluding security got just leveled by a couple of Rams, former Seahawk Bobby Wagner and the other Ram. Let me grab his name real quick because I want to make sure I give him credit too. I think it was McKinnon. It's in the story here, but McKinley, Takaris McKinley. Anyway, they just leveled this guy. Bobby came off the sideline and just leveled this guy. And security took them off the field. These guys are running around the field with these pink smoke bombs. You know, a very, very effective protest. Well, the protester has gone and filed a report, a police report, against both Bobby Wagner and Takaris McKinley of the Rams, saying that they were he was assaulted by these football players. Blatant assault by the two Rams is the charge, because it wasn't Bobby Wagner's job to keep security on the field. It was the security at Levi Stadium in Santa Clara, and Wagner and McKinley's coming off the sideline to take down this protester, this trespasser, was nothing short of an assault. Now, Wagner hasn't been charged with a crime, nor McKinley. Wagner's statement was, you know, hey, you don't know what the fans got or what they're going to do. So he thought, in hindsight, it's okay, the guy protesting the treatment of animals at factory farms, fine. The guy only had a smoke gun or a smoke bomb, fine. No one knew that at the time. The guy was eluding security. Bobby Wagner deputized himself to become part of security because who knows what this guy was going to do. These days, people are, you know, people go off half-cocked.
But isn't doing what the guy did illegal already?
It is. Exactly. Exactly.
So he did something illegal, and then his complaint is, someone stopped me in the midst of committing an illegal act. That shouldn't be legal.
The person who stopped me, it wasn't their job to stop me. I mean, say, for example, somebody jumps over your fence, trespasses on your yard, and hurts their ankle. As the homeowner, you're still kind of responsible. There are some really weird loopholes about liability, and you know, you can sue somebody. You break into somebody's house and hurt yourself, you can sue the homeowner that you broke into.
Well, nowadays, he should be glad he just hurt his ankle instead of getting shot.
No, I agree completely. I think if it ever does, I don't think it'll ever make it to court.
That'll be tossed.
Yeah, yeah. Bobby Wagner was doing a public service, not knowing what this person's mental state or state of armed, you know, trespassing was. Anyway, the guy filed charges against Bobby Wagner. And Bobby Wagner may have to, you know, actually get a lawyer and go to, or, you know, let the public defender handle it, because this guy didn't have a shot in court, I don't think. Anyway, that's customer service. Bobby gave the customers at Levi some service, big time. It's Car Nights, folks. We'll be right back.